This podcast episode is supported by EBRD. Support to small and medium-sized businesses is an important part of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development's mandate. Activities to support small businesses include direct and indirect financing through partner institutions. The EBRD's Advice for Small Businesses team provides the knowledge, the network, and the skills to help emerging businesses innovate, thrive, and succeed.
Hello, Recursive Community, and welcome back to our podcast series. Our next guest is on a quest to unlock the code of longevity. Milena Georgieva is a professor of molecular biology, genetics, and epigenetics at the Bulgarian Academy of Science. She is also co-founder and chief scientific officer at the startup company Epix AI. In her role, Professor Georgieva is in charge of R&D activities and manages a group of experts working to understand the process of aging and create instruments to measure the biological age and extend human lifespan. Professor Georgieva, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
I'm very happy that you're here. It's been a while since I wanted some of the co-founders of Epix AI to share here what you're working on, because I believe it is quite exciting. And we don't have much experience in epigenetics, especially in our part of the world, Southeast Europe. But before we speak about your entrepreneurial journey, I would like to start a bit earlier and bring you back in life. How did you become fascinated with the world of molecular biology and genetics and also epigenetics? Because we had this conversation where all the three now need cross-disciplinary understanding and research. But tell me how it started.
Irene, thank you very much for this question. You just bring me... let's say not so long time ago, but yes, at the time when I was a young scientist at the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences, when I started my career as a PhD student in molecular biology. And it coincided with a very interesting time in biology as a whole, which was the completion of the Human Genome Project. So this was a long quest of understanding the human hereditary information, the molecule of DNA. It has been discovered in 1953 as the double helix, and the scientists won the Nobel Prize for this. But we didn't know what exactly in the DNA was coding proteins, and which proteins, what they were doing in our body, in the organisms of living creatures. And when the human genome started back in 1991, I was in the high school, as a matter of fact, and was completed 20 years after, I was a young scientist. And at that time, I realized that my life journey in the field of science would be truly fascinating, because to know the code of life, to know the code of DNA, is something that is very important for all fields of our life, not only for science, not only for biology, not only for molecular biology, but for everything that we do in our daily lives, even when we do entrepreneurship as well. So I said, well, this will be quite an interesting journey. Well, a very difficult one, because I was situated in Bulgaria, so we were just hearing this news coming from abroad. And joining a team, which was a very dynamic team of young scientists at that time. My mentor, my PhD mentor, was also a very young scientist at that time. So we just started this journey to understand what drives the human genetics working in a certain way. Does this depend on the surrounding factors? How these surrounding factors, our lifestyle interventions, influence the genetic material? And are we so doomed by the genetic material that we just take from our parents and great-great parents and so on and so on? So are we somehow following the fate of our grandparents, or we could change something and make this DNA working in a different way? So this was my PhD thesis. When I defended it, it was a focus on aging and how the influencing of the factors of the surrounding environment are driving the genetics of the organisms during their chronological lifespan. And when I defended it, I started being a young scientist with a PhD, going to courses, interacting with other people abroad, with other colleagues, and we started building a community, a very good community in molecular biology, genetics, and epigenetics. And that's how I came into the center of one of the most fascinating, fastly developing science field, which is molecular biology. And it is, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, it is implemented in every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm. And more than a decade after, where do we stand when it comes to decoding life or understanding how genetics work? How much research is there still to be done?
Because the more we know, the more questions we start asking, that's which is part spiral. of this amazing, beautiful nature of science. So following this path of being a scientist is something that makes you pretty much curious about the world and asking questions. So this is a devotion. This is something that you should do by heart, as a matter of fact. So we have a lot of things to address yet. This huge knowledge, this data, biodata that we started gathering, started directing us to different fields like longevity and health span, like personalized diets, personalized protocols for physical activities, for example. Personalized and precision medicine are things that are developing at a fast pace nowadays, but we have a lot of questions to address because we know the genetic code of a person. We know how he or she lives in her daily life, but we don't know what exactly trigger the mechanisms that drive the translation, the expression of the genetic material. And so those are the questions that we ask in our daily laboratory routine. How certain factors, certain triggers can make a gene working differently in me and working quite differently in you, though the genes are completely the same and they code the same proteins. So a lot of questions nowadays should be addressed. And one of the major challenges maybe is the abundance of information that we start gathering, information from genetic research, information from biochemical research, data from biophysical research. So these interdisciplinary fields of science, of biomedical science, gather a lot of data. And those data are somehow dispersed. They are not structured. And this is a challenge nowadays, especially in the field of AI, because we have to structure this data. We have to organize this data in a logic way, you know, the AI and ML algorithms to take it and to start working with it in order to bring some meaningful conclusions that can be applied on a human body, for example. So those are the challenges nowadays. Of course, this is a very expensive science. And if we address this in Bulgaria, this is quite difficult in Bulgaria to do such a modern research, though it's not impossible, not at all, as a matter of fact, because now we are open, we have a lot of collaborations, but those are some challenges that we should definitely address on the ecosystem of modern biomedical research in Bulgaria and on the Balkan Peninsula. But yes, a lot of things should be addressed, and I'm happy because we're going to have a lot of work from now on.
What is necessary? Because you mentioned that it's not impossible, but it is challenging. So how can we overcome these challenges so that we have world-class research happening in Bulgaria or in Southeast Europe in general in your field?
Well, this is a very, very interesting and nice question because it should address the whole ecosystem, the whole ecosystem of research and also of translating this research to business. So the moment the business understands the so-called the essence of science and scientific breakthroughs in their businesses, they will start investing. Nowadays, especially on the Balkan Peninsula, in our ecosystem in Bulgaria particularly, we work on a granting system, which means that, okay, we build a group of researchers, we apply for a grant, we get the grant, we do our work, and okay, we can produce amazing results. We do publish after that in renowned journals with high impact factors and so on. But somehow these scientific breakthroughs stay in the papers. They're there. Mm-hmm. They just stop the moment the grant system is just finished. The grant is finished, is successfully completed. But you don't have the step toward integration of these scientific breakthroughs to the business after that. So this leap, this gap should be filled with a lot of efforts, like scientists and entrepreneurs and business people and also governmental people as well. They should see this huge gap between science, scientific breakthroughs, business, in order to make the ecosystem work in unison, work in symbiosis, in order to produce meaningful results that coming in the lab should be implemented after that in the business of whatever business you can mention. Scientific breakthroughs are there because whatever we do in our daily lives is science. Water is science. This glass is science. The way we feed our bodies is science. It has been born in the laboratories before being implemented in our daily life routines. So this is something that should be the whole mindset of the scientist and the business people and the government people should be a bit changed, transformed in order to work together in collaboration to bring meaningful results. Mm-hmm. So this is a gap that I see because when I speak with scientific people, my people, we speak in a different language. When we go on a scientific conferences, we speak differently the way we should communicate our scientific results. But when we go on entrepreneur meetings or meeting with the business, I see the huge misunderstanding sometimes between the scientific community and the other community, and even governmental community, because science communication should be produced both ways. Okay, scientists should communicate in a more excellent, more comprehensive way what they do in the labs in order to make the business and the government understand that this is a very huge breakthrough for the whole ecosystem in a certain country. But also the government and the business people should be open for this, not only following their own routines, but also be open. So both sides should start speaking the same language. This is something that I try to change with my colleagues and with my different partners from different fields of science and business that I do, in order to start speaking the same language in order to boost this scientific business collaboration.
This is why I'm also so grateful that you're here, because I don't necessarily believe that we need to speak the same language, but I do believe that we need the translators between the different fields so that we actually align our goals and in a segmented society like the one that we live in today. I do believe that translators are of great value. And in this sense, I see also now the recursive in this role. And this is why we invited you, and I hope that we would manage to debug some misunderstanding. Now, speaking of not letting research be forgotten somewhere in the papers, I do believe that entrepreneurship could be also a way to make research applicable, give and have impact on the world. Is this why you discovered also the gene of the entrepreneur in you lately and joined Epics AI?
Well, we all have this gene for entrepreneurship because this is something that makes you develop yourself and apply your ideas in practice, in different kind of ideas. But how did I do this? Well, in the field that I do research, which is modern biomedical field, specifically genetics and epigenetics, what I see is this application and implication of our results in the daily lives. I already said this. So when I realized that this information is essential for the humankind, I started thinking how to translate, as you already said, these results to practice. How can we make these results from the laboratories vital, living in the real world? Mm-hmm. So that's why I started speaking with other people, but I'm also a science communicator. So by communicating the science that I do, I started meeting with different people from the business, from the entrepreneur field. So it was very interesting for me to speak with this transdisciplinary staff, let's say, people that are different from me. And I started to realize that what I do, what we do in our labs is something essential, and we should translate, communicate, and also apply this in practice. That's why I started thinking, how can we make these things really living, really vital, as I said already? And entrepreneurship and spinning off culture is something that started emerging in my mind, because being a scientist in this field, I need to follow all the modern trends. So I need to be very well educated what's going on the worldwide scene and be able to apply this on our ecosystem. And what I saw that is a lot of startups, a lot of companies started to emerge, and they were headed by people that were real scientists. They were professors, they are professors in molecular genetics, they are professors in biophysics, and those people were able to communicate their scientific breakthroughs and make them really developments in real practice. And I said, why can't we do this in Bulgaria as well, especially in the field of biomedical research, that there are not so many startups, because it's difficult, because it's challenging, because people are not ready, maybe, or maybe we should communicate this in order to make them ready to apply and to just hack these ideas that are developed in the lab. And especially in the field of genetics and epigenetics, it was truly necessary. Let's say it was somehow an ambiguous development to apply these developments from the lab in the practice. And I started meeting with other people, and we said, why not we combine efforts and start building something that is truly viable for the people and truly important for them. And that's how EPIX was born. I had other, tries and attempts before to develop some other ideas. Some of these ideas were just drowned to death, you know. Mm-hmm. But I continue to develop them on a granting system, because the ideas are really good. It doesn't mean that if the idea is not developed in a startup after that successfully, it cannot be developed in another way later on. So I work on different fields, but all of them are concentrated on the way surrounding factors and the way our daily life influence the way the genetics work. And this is precision medicine, this is biomedical field, this is longevity, health span, and age-related diseases. Mm-hmm. So this is how the gene was there. So I just needed the right conditions to make it express its information.
So that we can also put maybe a bit of context and translate to our audience what EPIX is doing. Can you maybe first start with the difference between what genetics is about and what epigenetics is about?
Yes. So genetics is this science that deals with the genetic material that you have already inherited by your parents. And this genetic material is a reflection of the hereditary information of your parents, great parents, great grandparents, and so on and so on. So we are just a projection of the genetics of our parents. And this is something that you cannot change. Okay, you are born this way, and you're going to bring these genes to your next generations, and you will die with these genes. So the way they are in your body, you cannot change this. This is the tattoo that you have that somehow you cannot change, because it's there and you have to bear it during your whole life.
So we're doomed with them and we're blessed with them.
we thought that we are doomed. Yeah. Yes, we are definitely blessed, because without this genetic material, we could not be living creatures, you know. Mm-hmm. So yes, we are blessed. But whether we are doomed is something that this modern genetics started to deal with and started to teach us that, no, we are not doomed. We should know the genetic material. It's very important, because this is the blueprint of yourself, of your body. This is the blueprint that you transmit to your next generations. But the way it is expressed, the way this scenario is read and interpreted after that, is something that is in your hands. Mm-hmm. And this is the epigenetics. This is the additional layer of information, of hereditary information, that is on the genetic material. Mm-hmm. And it is a projection of your way of living. It is a projection of the way your parents are living or have been living. It is a projection as well of the way your grandparents have been lived. So it's very important information for our audience to understand that what we do in our everyday life has implications on this, let's say, chemical makeup of our DNA. And this chemical makeup of our DNA can drive genes on and off up and down, no matter that you do not change these genes, you change the rate, the speed on which they work. And this is what is epigenetics. And it comes from the Greek word epi, which means above. It's something above the genetics, but don't think it's something that is isolated from our genetics. Genetics and epigenetics cannot be without being together. They are not separate. Mm-hmm. You cannot have genetics without these epigenetic mechanisms to drive its expression. And you cannot have epigenetics without the background and the blueprint to work on. So that's what we understood after the completion of the human genome, that we are very much similar by genetic material with other human creatures. More than 0.1, 0.2 percentage of difference following the genes that we have been inherited by our parents. But it turned out that we are quite different because those genes work differently. It depends on the surrounding conditions during conception, even preconception, before even our parents were ready to have children. All this epigenetic makeup have been already on the top of their sperm cells and oocytes. And this has been transmitted to us.
But we are still in control to, I don't know, switch them on, switch them off through our lifestyle. Can we also restart them like we restart our, I don't know, computer?
Yes, that's a very good metaphor that you use, because this is what exactly what we do in the lab. So we would like to see what exactly drives this resetting of our epigenome, what drives this erasure or editing of different hues on the top of our genes, and whether it works on a general principle, which means that you can reset all your genes or not. Which genes you can reset? Because there are some essential genes that you it's better not to reset them or shut them down.
So I cannot or make my
exactly,
eyes blue or green.
Yes,
No.
This is in the genetic. This is in the genetics
exactly.
Part. Yes. Yeah. So okay. Still, we have this. We have these components to tell you that it's in the genetics or is something that you can change. But 80% of the diseases in the human population, those chronic diseases, those age-related diseases like metabolic, like diabetes type 2, like neurodegenerative diseases, or some kind of cancer types, are not hereditated, are not something that is in our genes. There's something that happened because there is a resetting in the way the genes work during our lifestyle, let's say. So certain interventions like physical activity, like certain diet, that's why I said we now work for personalized diets. Taking some supplements, for example, or some medications, those interventions that can definitely change, reset, and modulate the way your genes work. And this is the epigenetics. And we know very well, which mechanisms, how they change the genes, their work, the way they're working in certain environment, why a certain organism is reacting differently in the same environmental conditions, because the background is different, the genetic background is different, because the epigenetic background is also different. And this is something that we do. And this is huge data, by the way, and that's what we do in EPICS, as a matter of fact.
I was just about to come to that, but I was actually surprised.
You and the genetic, epigenetic magic.
Yeah, just wanted to explain that also to our audience, because it is a field that is also extremely interesting for me. And recently I was just reading a journalistic article. I'm not the PhD student, but it was sharing the story of two twins which were forcefully separated due to different conditions. The one grew up in North Korea, the other one grew up adopted in the States. And although the genetic material was identical,
exactly,
because they were identical twins, they turned out to be very, very differently, especially also in terms of psychological development. So in this sense, to what extent is a genetic material defining how we are going to be as personalities, what kind of personality disorders we might have, and to what extent can we have a control on that through the epigenetic material?
Yeah, those twin studies are something that burst out as a research immediately after the sequencing of the human genome, mm-hmm. because they are the best, the excellent example of how the same identical genetic material can work differently if this genetic material is placed in a different environment. Mm-hmm. So the twin studies is something that is very meaningful as information that we start gathering. One of the best scientists is Tim Spector. Probably you read an article about his research because he is one of the best in UK for making twin studies. But it's very important because it has been proven that the moment identical twins are separated or are being raised in different conditions, they start differing completely in the way even they look like. Okay, they have certain traits that are based on the genetic material, as you already said, the color of the eyes, the color of the hair, the height to some extent also is influenced by different genetic point mutations as well. But whether this will be developed, whether you're going to be tall depends on the way you will be fed during your individual life, the way you have been introduced to certain sports as well. You can see there are certain sports that can make you be taller than other sports that can structure your body in a different way. So this is something that shows that environmental factors like physical activity, food, supplements, medication, stress can influence the way, even political ideology, because when people are separated differently, they live in different religious and politically oriented countries. They start differing in their mindsets. They start differing in the way they accept and perceive life. They start differing in the way they respect religion as well. This is something that is influenced by the epigenetics. And in the case of these two twins that you already mentioned, is something that is that shows you that complex traits of the human species, complex traits, which is intellect, which are psychological development, intellect in any kind of emotional intelligence, linguistic intelligence, spatial intelligence, mathematical intelligence, et cetera, those are things that you can develop. Which means that no matter what kind of genes you have been inheriting from your parents, if you start developing certain traits, complex traits in a newborn, for example, you give this newborn a very big possibilities to have a very high IQ, to have a very high emotional intelligence, to have let's say, stable psychological traits or schizophrenia or some neurological disorders, because there are some data that show that identical twins can, and in many cases, die by different diseases. And if one develops, for example, schizophrenia, the other cannot develop it. So it means that the genetic blueprint, the background is there. But depending on the way it is influenced by the surrounding factors, it can be expressed differently, leading to different complex human traits. And when I'm asked by people, can we make designer babies? Now we know the genetic code. Can we make a baby in which the IQ can be very high, or it can be like a model, et cetera, or let's say an excellent runner, for example, can we make this? This is my immediate answer, which is no, because those are complex human traits and that they are not driven by one single gene. They're driven by many genes and also by the interaction of these genes with the surrounding environment. Mm-hmm. And this is the essence of epigenetics. This is this chemical makeup that we can make. And I have also a very good comparison and also example of how the genetic material works differently. Because I tell people, if you are a person that comes from a family of centenarians, if you place your genetics, which is the genetics of centenarians, obviously, even without genetic testing, people can say, okay, I'm just bearing the genes for living until 100 years, for example, 120. But if you put these genetics in bad conditions, if you don't treat your body well, if you don't eat healthily, if you don't move, if you are obese, if you have laziness, you don't develop your brain, etc., etc., your possibilities and opportunities to be a centenarian are much reduced than a person who comes from a family that has not being so lucky with his parents, for example, or great-grandparents. Mm-hmm. And those people, even that they do not bear these genes for centenarians, if they start taking care of themselves, if they start protocols for personalized and well-designed diets, for example, or physical activities protocols, or moderating stress, etc., etc., all these, let's say, hacks for longevity and lifespan, then the possibilities of this person who is not with the genes of centenarians are much higher than the first one. And this is an emblematic example of how, excellent example of how one and the same genetics can work differently and mm-hmm. can be expressed differently, no matter whether you're doomed by having the genes of a Nobel Prize winner father, for example. If you don't develop your brain, your possibilities are just reduced mm-hmm. on a very, very explicit level.
This podcast episode is supported by EBRD. Support to small and medium-sized businesses is an important part of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development's mandate. Activities to support small businesses include direct and indirect financing through partner institutions. The EBRD's Advice for Small Businesses team provides the knowledge, the network, and the skills to help emerging businesses innovate, thrive, and succeed.
So, in a way, the discussion about the eternal fight between nurture and nature is now getting even more complex. Speaking of complexity, I'm thinking that because you mentioned individual protocols or individualized medicine, it's not going to be the same for every person. So what is healthy for me is not necessarily healthy exactly. for you. And this is also one of the problems that you're dealing with in EPICS. But maybe first, what is the purpose of EPICS? What is the mission that you're after? Why did you found the company?
So the mission that we are after is linked with our understanding of human lifespan. So the moment we understood that it doesn't matter whether you have a long lifespan, if you do not have the health span, mm-hmm. it means that you don't have anything. Because in the demographic crisis nowadays, we see so many people at the age of 60, 70, 80, 90, which are with deteriorating health. So those people are with chronic diseases. Those people are a heavy burden for the economic and medical systems worldwide, not only in Bulgaria. And when we gather in EPICS, three different fields of sciences like biology, molecular biology, bioinformatics, genetics, epigenetics. This is the biological field with AI field and machine learning field, mm-hmm. guys that are very good in crunching this data, working with huge amount of data. And when we started speaking in between each other, again, with the help of entrepreneurs on the other side and people that are managers and know how to translate these ideas between the two teams, we understood that, yes, we have a lot of data from genetics and epigenetics of aging, mm-hmm. biology of aging, and we know a lot of protocols how to tackle a longer health span. And we said, okay, let's bring these two spheres of big data, okay, the AI possibilities and opportunities with the data of biology of aging, let's say it in mm-hmm. in a more explicit way. So when we gather these two fields, biology of aging and AI, we understood that the algorithms of AI can deal with this data, can structure this data, and can provide protocols for personalized regimes, personalized interventions for a human body when this body is ready to provide all the data that we gather every day with our biochemical results, with our imaging diagnostics, with our wearable devices as well, because we are now wearing a lot of things that measure our steps, our heart rate, our quality of sleep, and so on. And when we combined the biodata of a human body with the surrounding data, the so-called metadata linked with their chronological age and wearable devices, analysis and all this tracking data, we said we can be very precise in estimating the biological age of a person, which is quite different from the chronological age, because the chronological age is something that is counted in your years. You are born in a certain year, and in 2023, you are, for example...
How do you establish the biological age
of a person? This is the magic that we do in ethics, as a matter of fact, yes. So we differentiate between this chronological and biological age, and the biological age of a body, of a human body, is something that is driven by the way this body lives, the way it's fed, the way it moves, the way it's intervened with different medications and supplements. So if you get this data from a human body, and also if you get the data from epigenetics, which is very important because those are the chemical marks that...
How do you sequence the epigenetics?
Exactly how the DNA is sequenced on a general principle. There are some additional steps in order to convert DNA, in order to spot the certain places where you have the chemical modifications. But the protocols are standardized. They work on a pretty well
so
base.
So you just need genetic material.
You just need the saliva or some scratching of your cells from the inner part of your oral of your mouth, and we are ready. We can sequence your DNA. We can sequence your epigenetic information, and gathering this data and combining it with the surrounding data from your wearable devices or from your medical history, we can measure your bio age and can tell you, okay, Irina, your bio age is much younger than your chronological age.
I doubt it. But
yes. Okay. We can measure it. Don't worry. And we can tell you. You can continue living this way. Or, if it is in the opposite direction, do this, that, and so on.
This is what's interesting. So, if I would like to change something in my lifestyle so that I am more healthy, are the protocols of increasing my health or prolonging my health? Also, is there a pattern or is it strictly individualized? Because that's what's confusing me. If you Google healthy diet, I think you're going to die rather from hunger and the confusion than finding what actually works for you. And what I find pity is that because we rely so much on advice and because especially eating is something which is more of a cultural ritual than nourishment, I believe, in our society. We don't listen so much to what our body is telling us. We have lost the intuition that is telling us, okay, I would like to eat cabbage today, or I don't know, I'm craving this and that. I think we do sometimes have this information coming from our brains to our guts, or I don't know where it's actually going and how is it
exactly
working.
This is the direction.
I would guess
gut brain connection.
But we rely so much on protocols which are somehow described on the internet, and it turns out that quite often they're actually not healthy for me, for you, or maybe healthy for others.
This is a problem. This is a very big problem, and in the internet you can exactly drown yourself in an ocean of information of this and that diet, recommendations and nutritionists, etc., etc. But what we don't know is the need and the deficiency of our body. This is something that we don't understand, and those are the signals that you said, and those are the voice of your body that you have to open your senses and here. But not only here, there are so many possibilities to measure the needs and the deficiency in your body. And one of the best scientists in the field of anti-aging, for example, supplements or any kind of supplements, started to recommend, listen, see what are the needs and the deficiency of your body, and then we can start prescribing protocols. Because I'm following the diet of Mr. Hicks. It's not something that is truly good for you. In some cases, in some occasions, it could bring even harm to your body because your body is not the body of Mr. Hicks or Professor Hicks. It's your body. And this body has certain genetic, epigenetic characteristics, biochemical characteristics, microbiome characteristics, environmental influences, which are different from the environmental influences from Mr. or Professor Hicks. So you have to know this digital projection of your body. And the more data you have about your body, the more precise will be the protocols for your personalized lifestyle interventions. And this is what people should understand. They need to know what the body is composed of by genetic, epigenetic, surrounding, metadata, biochemical data, microbiome data. And here we have the possibilities of AI that can deal with this data and can deal in a very good way, as a matter of fact, and can give not only estimation of your bio age, but can give you an estimation of your physiological state, of your medical state, and can tell you you are predisposed to diabetes or obesity or neurodegeneration. So you have to take these and these personalized steps in order to measure, to monitor, and to change and modify the way your physiology will be expressed. Because you can be wearing a genetic mutation for Alzheimer's, for example. But if you know this, if you take certain protocols, if you monitor your surrounding environment, this Alzheimer's could never be implemented in your individual life. And this is the epigenetic prevention. And what I used to say, and I'm very much into communicating, is personalized prevention. Even in prevention, in preventive medicine, in preventive science, certain diseases, you should know how to personalize these prevention protocols. And this is, again, the knowledge that you should gather about your genetic material, of your epigenetic makeup, and of the way you live, and supplement your body with all kinds of medications, food, nutrients, and so on and so on. All these protocols. This is what we do in Epix. We try to gather the digital projection of a human body by this genetic, epigenetic, and all kinds of surrounding data, and build protocols for personalized prevention of age-related diseases, and it goes with monitoring your biological age. So when we speak about extension of health span, we speak about extension of those years when you are alive without age-related diseases. And age-related diseases are metabolic disorders and syndromes. Diabetes type 2 is here, obesity, microbiome dysbiosis. It's also neurodegeneration, any kind, Parkinson's, depression, Alzheimer's, etc., etc. So all these chronic diseases, which are a burden for people nowadays, due to the demographic crisis, is something that we start tackling with Epix, and the combination of these two expertises, the biology and biological information of the human body, and the AI algorithms that can digitally project you here, and you can see the hotspots for which you should put your attention to develop the so-called precision prevention.
And what is the next frontier of Epix AI? Can you elaborate maybe a bit more on what's coming in 2024? Because the way that you describe it, I'm seeing so many opportunities that you can develop. It's such a broad field. Yeah. Let's say 2024 business goals. And if I become your user, I don't know, at the end of 2024, what could I expect? How can you help me live a healthier life or increase my health span?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I'm in charge of the scientific development of Epix, but I also attend the meetings for business development, and what we aim is indeed fundraising for developing our platform, which platform will exactly combine all this data that we have been discussing, the genetic, epigenetic of a person, and also the surrounding data. So this is what we aim in 2024, even more, let's say so. So fundraising for developing the platform in order to make it a vital one. Because why it's important to gather this money? Because we are now in a pre-seed part and so on and so on. So we are developing things. We started maybe 1 year or 1 year and a half, we started all these developments, but now we are on a very fast pace and race in order to make this product a real product in the practice. So those are our goals: fundraising and developing the platform in order, at the end of 2024, when you are our client, to be able to make a digital projection of your body and be able to tell you, Irina, your bio age is Hicks ears, for mm-hmm. example. This is a good sign, mm-hmm. let's say so. This is a good sign as I see you. Yes, okay, I can say this is a good sign. But the biological clock inside has its own pace. So we can look very nice and we can feel very young. But what's going on a molecular mechanisms and pathways is something that our platform can tell you. Irina, you look nice, you're very good, you're young and you're very active. But you have certain predisposition to development of those diseases. Mm-hmm. And you can prevent them by doing this, this, and this, and by providing us data and also access to your wearable devices in order we to be able to guide you through all interventions that you will apply on yourself, to be able to tell you, Irina, you're doing this. For example, you're making 10,000 steps, or you're doing calisthenics or aerobics or fitness. Continue to do this, but increase the incidence of these things, okay? Mm-hmm. Do it in a more often way.
This I know for sure.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. You feed your body with this kind of diet, change it with this one, and we can tell you what it's good. Because what it's in the general field of health span protocols now, we have a lot of protocols by doctors, Sinclair, Professor Sinclair, by Peter Attia, by Jeff Bezos. Everyone is sharing his own protocol, which is really good because those protocols are scientifically based, but they do not work in the same way for different people. So we will be able to tell you, Irina, following this protocol, which is the Irina's protocol, not of Dr. Sinclair, but the Irina's protocol, which is highly precision and highly precise and highly personalized, you can be able to slow down your bioage, but you will definitely decrease the risk of the onset of those diseases that you are predisposed to. This is the most valuable information, not only because, okay, you can brag around your friends, I'm a very young bio age, they will say, so what? But you can tell them, but I'm predisposed to Alzheimer's, for example. Let's hope not, but yes, I am, for example. And you can say, but by doing this, following the protocols and the monitoring strategy of Epics AI, I will never be able to develop this predisposition in my individual life, which is the most important information that you will, and also intervention that we will apply on your body. So those are our scientific and business goals for 2024. But the field is vast. It's pretty much fast developing. A lot of people are doing a lot of things in this field, which is good because we have a lot of data and we have a very solid science behind it, which is important for a startup. If it is a health tech, for example, it's truly essential to be scientifically solid and backed up by real science.
What I also like about it is that it pretty much also empowers the individual themselves to deal with their health, because so far we were actually pretty much dependent on the health system, the pharma system that we are growing up. And I have to say that I grew up in a family where we were a bit skeptical, because the experience was once you start going to the doctors, you just keep on going to doctors. Yeah. They always kind of like find you something. And in this sense, I'm curious if we have the tools to act preventively in terms of diseases and our health, isn't that going to change or require the change of the whole health system the way that we know it today? Because the current medicine is not focused on preventing diseases. It's actually focused on treating the diseases, not even that much on curing them, I feel, especially in terms of chronic diseases. If you're given the diagnosis for a chronic disease, you're pretty much doomed for the rest of your life? Or this is how I felt when I got my diagnosis. The doctors didn't understand how it's working. They didn't understand why is it happening. And when I asked them, but how is diet going to maybe affect, they said, we don't know. We can prescribe you medicine that you should be taking for your whole life, and they have these amazing side effects that you also need to deal with. And I was like, I'm not even sure that I want to do that. I'm not even sure that I trust you.
Yeah. So you're right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes, the so-called canonical standard medicine is even not healing diseases, it's treating symptoms.
Yeah.
And when I communicate the modern biomedical science to medical congresses, because I'm also doing this, mm-hmm. I see the big non-understanding of the medical specialist, of the scientific breakthroughs that deal with knowing the molecular mechanisms of a certain disease and also the molecular mechanisms and pathways of certain interventions and medications to treat these pathways. They just need the symptoms and they treat the symptoms, but it's not their fault. It's the fault of the educational system.
I was just about
because
to say
I have
that,
so yeah. many mm-hmm. students that come to me and say, oh, I heard your podcast and you changed my whole perception of the medical education. How we do not learn this in our yeah. educational system, because the system is old fashioned. It's not relevant anymore. And what's happening in the field of modern biomedicine, as I say, is that science is very fast moving. It's developing on a cosmic speed. So it's something that happens every day. We have huge amount of solid scientific data that drive a certain disease to a certain way, but this is not applied that easily in the medical field. And even my colleagues, which are medical specialists, are not willing to apply them. They are not willing to understand it, which is very sad. That's why this standard, the so-called medicine 2.0 is called by Peter Attia, and he's very right, as a matter of fact, is those medical interventions that most people don't trust, because he already described your patient journey. Mm-hmm. And I saw all this skeptic feeling. I felt it in yourself, in you, and I understood that this is the way it should not work. The doctor should know your predispositions. They should know your medical history. We are still dealing with electronic recipes, as you can see. What about the medical records? In the medical records, one of the first steps for prevention, for personalized prevention, is to see what your parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents were diagnosed with as a chronic disease. Those are the first signals for you that you might be predisposed.
The insurance company would like to know that, but
the insurance
so much
company
the
is another is another field. Yes,
yeah.
But
okay.
insurance companies also they provide medical insurances, as a matter of fact. And mm-hmm. what they do, they provide some examinations for prevention, as a matter of fact. So they had an interest. They also have an interest to what we develop in EPICS,
yeah.
because that this what we develop can bring them a lot of data and also added value, how to develop their insurance policies, et cetera.
Okay.
And maybe mm-hmm. they are even more modern than the standard medicine, as a matter of fact. Preventive medicine, mm-hmm. all the medicine in which we treat symptoms or we treat conditions before even the disease is there, is the medicine 3.0, which is the modern medicine, the preventive medicine, the medicine that is personalized, the medicine that is precision, that is precise, that is the so-called precision medicine, which is based on your genetic background, on your epigenetic makeup, on the way you live, on the way you feed your body, on the way you move around, on the way you moderate stress, even on the geolocation where you live, because this is also linked with a lot of surrounding factors.
By the way, you mentioned also something that I wanted to ask you about, and this is the code word stress, because somehow the increase in chronic diseases that we are seeing now in the human population, in the world population today, is pretty much often linked also to stress. And at the same time, what is stress? Mm. Because the way that I experience it, there is like good stress, but also bad stress.
Yeah.
Feeling anxious is pretty much like also feeling excited. It's just with a different label. And in this sense, I'm also saying something which is like common knowledge, that every disease starts actually in the head. Mm-hmm. It starts from the psychological state that we're in. How are you going to deal with the topic of stress in EPICS AI? And how is stress measurable? How can you measure if it's going to affect us in a bad way? That's like a big question for me.
Yeah, it's a very good differentiation between different types of stress because we are human beings that develop and evolve because of stress. So there is the so-called good stress and it's the so-called EU stress. Very few people discuss this, but the EU stress is something that keeps us fit, that keeps us solid.
EU stress?
EU stress.
Like the European Union or what? How is it written?
EU, it comes from the real stress, okay? EU, yes. Okay. But this EU stress, in Bulgarian, it's EU stress, so EU stress, is something that is very important for you. Yeah. Because this is, okay, now we have EU stress. We are concentrated, we have, and we are leading a very important conversation. Okay. This is EU stress. It provides the synthesis of neurotransmitters and factors in your body that can bring you in the condition that we are now, concentrated, speaking about important matters, discussing those important matters, etc., etc. EU stress is also flying to a different country. When you don't know where you go, but you plan something, you make your brain think, plan, create new connections, new memories, etc. This is EU stress. EU stress is also going to the fitness because you keep your body fit, you put some stress on your muscles, but this stress is a positive one. When this EU stress is on a harsh level, so it's a stress that is on a continuous base, it is linked with trauma in early childhood or during pregnancy. It is linked with trauma because of wars, of hunger, something that is truly harsh, truly strong, then you get the so-called distress. And when this distress is kept for a long time, the implications for your body on a genetic and epigenetic background are very, very solid. And there are many examples of this, that people that had childhood trauma, they're definitely doomed for the rest of their lives to be with depression, with neurological disorders, with problems dealing with stress, problems with mental abilities. So they have disabilities as well, mental disabilities, etc., etc. And this is because while you are in a period of distress, certain hormones, certain factors are being expressed from your genes on a very high level. And this is the epigenetics, because we have these genes for those neurotransmitters and for those hormones, cortisol, for example, adrenaline, etc. They're here. They sit there and they wait the surrounding environment to change in order to boost the expression through changed epigenetics in order to save the human body, because they are not there just to bother us and put us under stress. They are there because they try to counteract the harsh and adverse surrounding factors in order to cope with this stress. But when these surrounding factors are so intense and they're very often the coping mechanisms of stress cannot catch up. And that's why we get an indistress, which means that those genes that produce cortisol start working on a very high speed and pace, which means that you are very much stressed, though these cortisol molecules, they're not only traveling in your body, making you stress. They also interact with your genetic material. They are cofactors that drive the expression of your genes. Mm-hmm. And they can drive the expression of the genes that are linked to mental health, to physiological health. The gut-brain barrier works in both directions. The moment you change your microbiome, you change your mental state, the way you sleep even, and vice versa. The moment you have some mental stress, immediately you can feel it in your stomach. That's why we say, I have a gut feeling, because it's linked with the microbiome and the link between the gut and the brain. How can it be measured? Can be measured by heart rate, can be measured by the change in your daily routine. Immediately, the wearable devices can detect how you sleep, what's your heart rate, how you walk around, what's the pace of your steps as well. So those are factors that can immediately tell you, oh, you're under stress. Something's going on an adverse sense to your body, and you can measure the stress. Of course, there are also biochemical tests that can measure the levels of cortisol in your blood, and not only cortisol, but also other neurotransmitters. Even you can measure stress by checking your microbiome. Yeah. Checking your microbiome, you can immediately tell whether you're under stress or not. and how you can deal with this. So this is a whole ecosystem, the human body. And the more you know about the different brinks of the of this ecosystem, the more you'll be able to modulate the way the physiology, mental or physical physiology can be expressed in a different surrounding environment.
Mm-hmm.
Huge amount of data.
Now I'd like to sit for hours and talk to you because there is so much that I could learn, and I'm sure that it is very informative also for our audience. Definitely a field that maybe starts in the lab, but it is relevant for our everyday life. Mm. You know, now I can actually see it. You know, speaking of stress, sleep, gut health,
reproductive
and how
biology.
This is actually exactly
this is
how is
everything.
This related. It's not
everything.
About, you know, the vanity of aging or not aging as fast. It's actually a much bigger topic. But since I have to somehow bring the conversation to an end, because I do have that you're pressured for your next meeting, and I'm sure that you're also, in general, very busy, I would like to ask you maybe, given the complexity of how much also environment influences our health, how do you find a way to stay healthy, to do so many things and at the same time live a fulfilled life? What is your, I'm sure that it's not just one protocol and I'm sure that you're reading constantly, but how do you find your way in this jungle? How do you find your way in this complexity?
Well, for me, maybe it's much easier because I read all the scientific papers from my early scientist career. So I follow all these trends and I know which is solid science and which is not. So I can definitely differentiate between different protocols immediately and can apply something that is working for me. But first, I listen to my body. And it's a very standard approach. But yes, I listen to my body because the moment when I spend time feeling the signals coming from my body, my microbiome, my gut feelings and so on, the way I feel, the way I sleep, I start understanding whether I'm under stress or I'm not. I can differentiate it pretty fast and I know myself very well. So listen to your body is the first step. And it's indeed very standard, but it helps a lot because with all this surrounding noise in our modern daily lives, we stopped listening to our bodies. We prefer to listen to our phones, to listen to all the surrounding media and so on and so on without being able to sit for 5 minutes. We don't know what silence anymore, you know? So how can we hear these sounds that come from our body? So first, this is stay silent with your body and see how you react in different occasions. And you can understand your personalized way of approaching different factors and different environments. Second, differentiating between scientific solid protocols. And third, not going for supplements without knowing the needs and deficiencies in my body. I'm not a supplement freak. On the contrary, I try to bring what's necessary for nutrients, micro and micronutrients to my body by eating healthily, by developing protocols for healthy eating, which is again based on my genetic and epigenetic. Yes, I know my genetics because I'm a geneticist,
of
I
course.
Should know. So I know what I'm predisposed to and I try to avoid certain factors that will drive this predisposition into life. Mm-hmm. So yes, know your body. Listen to your body, stay in silence with your body. Never give up healthy habits because they will never harm you. On the contrary, they can only help you and start to develop a culture and education about what your body needs and how to supplement it. And yes, they help from startups like Epix, for example. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I do. Nothing very complex, as a matter of fact. It's so logic. Biology is very logic science, as a matter of fact. It's the science of life. And in life and in nature, everything is so simple and at the same time so perfect that you can not even add any more complexity to it. You just need to understand those rhythms, the biorhythms of your body, and you can be very well in your personalized prevention.
Amazing mastermind nature and how she designed
exactly
life. I'm really looking forward to launching the platform of Epix AI.
and
please,
be our...
Please take me as your early adopter. I promise to be engaged and give you regular feedback because it is a field that I'm especially interested in, and I'm sure that there will be even more people interested in that. I'm also sure that there will be also people who would like to ask you how they should actually deal
there
with their health.
Well.
And I'm sure that you won't be able to answer to all of them. So in this sense, very shortly, where is the best place to follow you? Maybe also learn a bit more on how these different worlds interact with each other, and also when you're going to launch Epix.
Well, we hope to launch Epix next year, as a matter of fact, as I already told you. But yes, I'm active in Facebook, I'm active in LinkedIn a lot. So most of my podcasts and interviews in newspapers and scientific papers, they are all exposed. So if someone wants to follow me, they follow me, as a matter of fact. So I put a lot of things, I discuss different developments from other colleagues as well. Mm-hmm. So I try to give my perspective, which I don't imply to be the perspective of everyone else, but it's my perspective. And it's good when a scientist can discuss this. You can start digging other information and start building your own approach, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Milena, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. We will be definitely following you.
Thank you. Thank you for this invitation.
It's been a wonderful pleasure because it is a diverse topic. We have quite often tech founders here, and here again we see this cross-disciplinary perspective of how we can actually marry the advancements of AI into understanding life and
luckily we have AI. Luckily we have it because we have a huge amount of data. So the more we know about the human body, the better we will modulate it.
Thank you, Milena.
I also thank you.
And if you're just as passionate about innovation as we are, hit subscribe for the Recursive Podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. We're everywhere.
This podcast episode is supported by EBRD. Support to small and medium-sized businesses is an important part of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development's mandate. Activities to support small businesses include direct and indirect financing through partner institutions. The EBRD's Advice for Small Businesses team provides the knowledge, the network, and the skills to help emerging businesses innovate, thrive, and succeed.